This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Julian Wiseman. How are you?
I'm doing very well today. How are you?
I'm not too bad, not too bad. You're a port expert of sorts.
I'm certainly a port enthusiast. I perhaps am an expert, but there's always more learning to do. There's plenty of things I haven't tasted.
Yeah, so the reason we got you on the show is because you're just about to publish or go send to print a book called Port Vintages.
I am indeed.
In fact, it's got a really catchy title. Port Vintages, the Chronicles of the Vintage Port from the Beginning.
It is indeed. It is the definitive reference book. I want it called the Chronicle. I want that to be its nickname. But the shippers seem to be calling it the Bible. One doesn't get to choose one's nicknames.
Yeah.
It is a definitive reference book on old vintage port.
Excellent. So we're going to talk about the port book later on, but just a little bit about yourself there, Julian. You're a mathematician, aren't you, or something crazy like that?
Oh, well, I have a degree in maths. Maybe I aspired to be a mathematician when I was young. I was quite good, but not as good as the people who were really, really good.
So
I didn't become a mathematician. Read maths at university. That's where I first tasted port.
Was university your first port, then?
I had wine with my father, dry red wine, but never port. He never drank port, never doesn't do it. I first had it at my matriculation dinner in October 87, and I knew immediately this was the wine for me.
Yeah, yeah.
It has a marvellous quality. It's big. I like big, strong flavours.
Yeah, yeah.
It has weight, it has massiveness, it has a long, rolling flavour. There are people expert in other wines, doubtless including yourself, for whom delicate is a word of praise. For me, delicate is not a word of praise. It's just not my type of thing.
What about really old ports, though? They must be.
Really old ports become more delicate. And my preference is not port that's super old.
Okay.
I know some of my friends like the tertiary, developed, Madeira-esque. Sometimes there could be a hint of sherry. Caramel notes are very, very old. But for me, the loss of the fruit after, say, 40 or 50 years diminishes the merit as a drink.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear what you're saying. A lot of English people like old wines. I always think of them as grab a granny, you know, and it's like, I like old wine with a little bit of backbone and a little bit of fruit as well.
But let me be fair here. Port can hold on to its fruit for half a century.
Yep.
Even weaker ports don't start to lose it till a quarter century.
Mm.
So if you're drinking vintage port, that which we're calling young here is, by the standards of most wines, fairly advanced.
Oh no! Well, no. Let's just be straight about this. There's old age,
yes,
by date,
yes,
and there's age by where it is in its lifetime cycle.
Sure.
And so, you know, for me, the way I think about it is, young wines are all fruity. Then they lose a little bit of fruitiness and develop tertiaries. Eventually, they lose all their fruitiness and they've just got tertiary aromas. And that's old stuff. Now, for port, you're saying that could be 50 years. For other wines, it could be 5 years.
Let me slightly challenge you on this.
Yeah, all good.
A friend of mine bought at auction a mixed lot of port, one bottle of which was Sandemann's cheapest grade of ruby.
Yeah.
You might think, why is this of interest? Because it didn't yet have the Cape logo on it. So this cheap ruby was probably late 20s. It was not meant to be aged, it was not meant to be stored, it was meant to be sold and drunk in a pub.
Yeah, yeah.
At the time, interwar, standard male drink was pint of bitter. Pint of bitter for me, please, and port and lemonade for the missus. Totally standard drink. This was that port that went with the lemonade. Cheap pub port. We're drinking it at 80 years old.
Yeah.
With some of the Sandemann crew.
With lemonade?
No. And so it's well past its life cycle.
It should
be long buried. Actually, it stood up really well.
It's lost its fruit, but it's all
tasty. It still had a little fruit left.
So that's not to
it
me.
It still had some sweetness.
Yeah.
It still had good some structure. Clearly, it was moderately faded. Whoever made that, now dead for a large fraction of a century, can be proud.
Yeah.
It was meant as non-expensive, cheap port, and it stood up to 80 years of presumably being inherited and not moving out of a cellar.
Just actually, that's quite interesting. Can we just touch on how they age, the really old stuff? Because you mentioned that the sweetness had faded.
In this ruby, in this old ruby, yes.
So do you find that with the port? Well, a young port I think of as high in alcohol, high in tannins, high in sweetness, and bags of fruit. You know, they're the and acidity is normally pretty firm as well.
But you've said that everything is big. That comes back to my original point.
So, so what happens after when the wine's just still got a little bit of fruit, but it's got a lot of tertiaries?
We're talking about vintage port here.
Very
young. So when it's been in bottle, say, 3 months to 2-3 years, it's a massive monster.
Yeah.
It's delicious. But it's not yet an evolved wine with the proper characteristics. But it is still an enormous bucket of damson jam, which has been squeezed tight into a small space. Then they go through a bit of an unbalanced phase. If you're drinking vintage port at 12 years, you may well go, what's the point of this? And what's the point of this is you should have either drunk it 9 years previously, or you should wait another 5-10 years. But they go through a bit of an awkward, gangly teenage phase.
That's very common for vintage ports.
Quite common for vintage ports, where it gets out of shape and doesn't move elegantly, shall we say.
Yeah. What's going on there?
What's changed?
It's out of balance. Different bits have advanced in the wrong pace. A teenager's the right analogy. The legs have grown and the torso hasn't, and it's all out of kilter. The traditional age to drink port is said to be 21, but actually in the historical records, a lot of people drank it at around 18, or starting from 18. It comes back together as a coherent whole. It moves well again. It's got good balance. The fruit is still very strong. There should be some good acidity. There's tannins. The alcohol will be integrated, so won't show very strongly, but there's a lot of alcohol in port. Mm-hmm. It's 1.5 times the strength of ordinary wine. It comes into a phase which can last 5 years maybe for some of the 5-10 years for a particularly weak vintage port, to most of half a century for something that's really, really big and strong.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So the temptation is, that bottle's 12 years since the harvest. I should drink it. It's actually the wrong time to drink it. And quite a bit of port disappears at the wrong time. So let me lightly discourage that.
Yeah, fair enough. But as the port gets really old, what happens to things like the... Because I always think as the fruit dries up, the alcohol becomes more noticeable.
Yes, I agree.
Fruit normally hides the alcohol, so you get a... Not necessarily a harsher alcohol, but you'll notice the alcohol more.
The alcohol can shift in flavour. In some, and I'm thinking Fonseca here, alcohol particularly comes across as white pepper. In some others, it can come across as black pepper. And then it grows older and it comes across just more plainly as alcohol.
Mm.
So some alcohol showing can be quite good, depending on what other flavours are there. But as it gets older, the alcohol shows more strongly. The brandy that was added is quite robust and lasts a long time. That's not my style of port. It's fascinating to taste.
Yeah.
But to my mind, vintage port, you should be drinking it up by half a century.
Yeah. Okay.
That's still not a problem most people are going to be having.
And what about the sugars? Because I know acidity backs off as well. The thing is, this is the weird thing with wines, is the acidity never actually changes, but your perception of acidity is that it backs off quite a bit. And
the same can be true with sweetness.
Yeah, I've had people tell me about that with old German ice wines and things like that, but I've actually never quite experienced it where I've gone, okay, the sweetness has backed off, so I'm in my unknown element here.
It can come across as barley sugar, particularly in vintage ports that are a bit lighter.
Mm-hmm.
It can come across as honey, even in very old ports. I've had 1800s ports where something like somewhere between a set honey and a runny honey was the dormant flavour. There's sweetness in that. That one I have in mind was very well integrated, still quite lovely. It can get hidden by the alcohol.
Yeah.
And if something has gone wrong, of course, it can just get hidden. So it varies. The sugar's quite a robust chemical, so it doesn't disappear, but it does come across in different ways.
Yeah, so it changes as well. Would you say it tastes as sweet as it probably did when it was younger, or does it feel...
Oh, like no, it feels like the squashed-in jam of very young port has maximum sweetness. At least the perception of it is that it's part of this enormous big package.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit unusual, because normally the way I think about it is sugar hides tannins hide sugar. That's why in a young port... vintage port, even though the tannins can be incredibly, oh my God, if you actually look at them, your mouth's gone, you know, they can be really quite, but then you've got all this sweetness in there, and that rounds out the mouth, and you don't really notice the tannins as much, And so you'd think that as the tannins, you know, polymerize, you know, clump together and sink out and come out of the port, that that sugar would then start to dominate. But in actual fact, the opposite happens. So
I'm not an expert in the chemistry.
No, I'm not either. I just try and understand what
the heck's
going on. But
if you're going to mention drinking very young vintage port to your listeners, you might mention they should not do it on a first date. Very young vintage port stains the mouth and teeth very purple. Indeed, if you put something a vintage port 6 months old in a glass and swirl it round, it will stain the side of the glass. Or yeah. Red wine, give it a swirl, it straight away drops. Yeah. You see the legs, but 5 seconds later, the glass is clear again. It's so sticky with all the sweetness, and it's so purple with the colours extracted from the skins. Not a first date unless she will or he will too.
I've got a decanter which I mainly use for things like port or old Bordeaux, and we've obviously left wine in there overnight, and it's not that it's not clear, it's just that instead of being crystal clear, you can see some coloration coming in it.
I blame port for that.
Glass has micro cracks and fractures in it. You can see where they are, because if you pour champagne in, that is the point where the bubbles will nucleate. And port stain can get into those. It is possible to clean them out chemically, but it's hard work.
Okay.
And if you do that, rinse thoroughly, like an obsessive compulsive being supervised by me, and then rinse again.
And what's the you must know. Next week we're gonna talk about your book in a bit more detail and go through various things. But this week I just wanted to talk a wee bit about port and what is the etiquette, because I've done tastings. We used to do a load of tastings for the Air Force as part of their, you know, they'd get cadets who are graduating as officers or whatever, and they wanted to know a wee bit about wine, which is fine. More than happy to go up and help them with that. But port is something they used to get a bit nutty about, you know, because they would have their big graduation ceremony, a bit like yourself, and they all had to bring a bottle of port, and they were all, you know, they were always worried about what port to bring, but also there was this whole etiquette about, you know, it's like that song "Pass the Dutchie from the Left Hand Side" or something. You know, there's all the rules. What are the sort of rules that you know,
right,
or the etiquette?
As far as I'm concerned, the basic rule is a quorum shall be the number present. You may open a bottle of port with one present because that is a quorum. That's it. Standard rules are a formal dinner, with lots of people. You're in a formal dinner with five of you round the table. Reach across and grab the decanter. Make sure your glass is not too empty. Don't take the last sip if it really belongs to someone else. The person who brought the bottle, the host or hostess or someone, something like that. You're just pretty... Five people round a table, drink it. I say with the main course, we can come and talk about that after. If you're at a formal dinner, Her Majesty the Queen is present, there's 40 people at table... Pour into your glass, it always goes to the left.
Yeah.
And that has the merit, because port was the last wine course, it's the wine course at which people would be most inebriated. It's not the fault of the wine. They've been drinking beer since lunchtime. They had champagne, they had sherry, they had white wine, they had red wine. They might have slipped in a couple of other courses. By the time they get to the port course, they're a bit...
Heavy.
Happy, thank you. I was going to say tired and emotional, to use the old private eye phrase. And so it is the time when confusion could be maximal. And therefore, simple rules are good. If you don't know what to do with the decanter, get rid of it to the left.
I suppose if you think about it, if you've got your wine glass top right,
yeah.
If you go right, you're going to knock your wine glass over, or there's a chance of it. Whereas on the left-hand side, you've got quite a bit of range before you hit their wine glass, perhaps, top right?
No, I think it's arbitrary, like driving on left or right.
Okay.
I think it's arbitrary. I think having decided the country's going to drive on the left... It's not a good idea for 5% of people to try to do something different.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're passing port to the left, pass it to the left, that is the end.
Yeah.
That's the rule, do it. But typically port is not drunk at a formal dinner with 40 people. And if you are going to a formal dinner with 40 people, the Archbishop of Canterbury is coming and the Queen is coming, you should ask whoever's invited you, what is the protocol for any matters I care about?
Yeah.
Right. That is not where most people dine. Actually, six people round a table in the kitchen. Don't knock over anything else and grab the decanter. Why is this complicated?
Okay, I've got another port thing that this has always bugged me, because I couldn't understand it. I teach WST, and I teach level 3 and 2 sometimes, and one of the things I need to know is the correct glass shape. And WST claims that the correct glass shape for port is a small glass. Now, I would have thought big wine, probably lots of alcohol, you want a big glass, swirl it, let the alcohol evaporate, all that sort of stuff. But they say small glass. And I was thinking, the only reason you'd ever want to port in a small glass, from what I can think of, is to stop you drinking too much. But what's your opinion on the glass shape for a port?
The listeners can't hear me looking puzzled at my host here. They really say small glasses.
Yeah, I got the textbook.
You've not muddled this up. You don't need to show me. I'll believe you. I'm just appalled. Something the size of a white wine glass.
Yeah.
It's all very well saying you've got to have a different glass of the right wine because you have 18 rooms in your house you use for storing glasses. Yeah. Meanwhile, back on planet Earth, where property costs as much as it does in London, you have a finite amount of storage space.
Yeah.
I use something like a tall sherry copita, a cheap Riedel port glass, and I use that for champagne, I use it for port, I use it for sherry, I use it for Madeira, I use it for whiskey. Now, you might argue that it's not perfect for any of them, and I'll accept that, but it's jolly good. You don't have something like...
I don't know exactly what the shape that is. So you're saying it's about the size of a white wine glass?
A white wine glass is an excellent alternative. Use a white wine glass for port.
Why that?
Because I think that the pores are too small for a giant Bordeaux glass.
What do you mean the pores are too small?
Well, a glass, you have a good quantity of Bordeaux.
Yeah.
If there's six of you for dinner and you're going to taste three ports, you're just not going to have half a Bordeaux glass full of port.
Yeah.
The measure is smaller.
Yeah.
And that, with a giant glass shape, whichever glass shape you're thinking of,
it's lost in it.
It's a bit lost in it. So you want a glass of some substance. You don't want one of these old-fashioned, tiny, pokey port glasses where it was filled almost to the rim and there was no air room and it was completely ludicrous. You want a glass with some air room and enough room to hold a decent measure, and a white wine glass is excellent for it.
Okay, cool.
And you don't need to be too fussy. You asked about protocol. Should I mention decanting?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. We've done decanting experiments where we've opened a magnum, poured it in through washed muslin, non-washed muslin, freehand, coffee filters, other things, all from a decant, into a variety of... and sat round the table with six glasses from six decanters containing the same wine, just decanted differently, and squabbled about, no, this one's better. No, the other one. Actually, let me try again. No, I've changed my mind. No, it was this one. No, I think you were right the first time. It doesn't really matter if you do something sensible with clean bits.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sediment at the bottom.
Yeah,
My technique is I pour freehand,
because
it's quick, until I see sediment. And then I go through an unbleached coffee filter.
Oh, yeah.
The unbleached coffee filter is a bit slow, because if it's sitting in a funnel, the wine can only go out of the very bottom.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cheating technique to make it a lot faster. Put a few clean teaspoons in the funnel. Now there's an airspace between the filter and the funnel. And the port can go out of the sides of the funnel as well as out of the bottom.
So what do you do? You got your funnel.
Funnel. Put 3 teaspoons or 4 teaspoons in the funnel.
Yeah.
Now imagine putting the coffee filter in. Coffee filter's no longer sitting tight against the sides.
Oh, yeah.
The space between the filter and the funnel, the liquid can also go out of the sides of the filter as well as out of the very bottom.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And that will make it go through 4 or 5 times faster.
Okay.
So I pour freehand for the first, for 80% of the bottle, and one coffee filter load for the last 20% is typical decanting technique. But the most important thing, clean decanter, please, sir.
And a decanter is necessarily, particularly for the old stuff, because they all chuck sediment.
They all chuck sediment. But when I say a decanter, a washed empty wine bottle is a decanter.
Yeah.
In fact, a
washing... Well, a Pyrex jug is quite good as well.
I keep screw cap wine bottles to use as portable disposable decanters. So if I'm going to a tasting, I can take it decanted, and I don't have to remember to bring a cut glass decanter home. Because it's just a screw cap wine bottle. Perfectly good decanter.
Well, what I normally do is I decant the wine, into a decanter, and then I clean the bottle out, and then I pour the wine back into that bottle.
And double decanting works too. Yeah. But port bottles are not screw cap.
No.
So the closure is slightly more awkward.
Yeah.
And as we do blind tastings, it's nice to bring it along in a bottle of screw cap Rioja, whatever. And that gives away no clues. Whereas if you've wrapped a bottle in tin foil, there'll be a little of the capsule peeking above, and the shape, if it's a Nieuport bottle, the shape will give it away, and there's bits of clues that leak out.
Yeah.
Whereas if I haven't produced the original bottle, no clues are given.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. All right, Julian, I think we'll wrap it up there, and next week we'll have a bit of a guess about your book. Just for references, we'll find out more about the book next week, but it's on portvintages.com, is that right?
Thank you very much, yes. It's an excellent book, and
we'll talk about it in detail next week.
We'll talk about it in detail next week.
Cheers, mate.